Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at the issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'm Tom Lyons. In today's show, we talk to Colonel David Hamler of the National Guard about the worldwide humanitarian missions. Lynn Schlukebeyer joins us to talk about celebrating the holidays with a loved one overseas. And finally, we'll look at the Minnesota military after the Civil War with Leland Smith. All this and more on today's Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Check our podcasts of today's show and all our shows on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's get started. This week, Colonel David Hamler joins us. He is the commander of the St. Paul-based 133rd Airlift Wings Medical Group. Colonel Hamler, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Oh, thank you.
Colonel, can you tell us a little bit about the 133rd Airlift Wing Medical Group?
The medical group, first of all, hello to everyone, and thanks for having me. The medical group is comprised of approximately 82 personnel. Of course, there's physicians, dentists, optometrists, nurses, medical technicians, administrators, everything you'd have in a hospital. Only our task is a little different because we're just not treating the common civilian population, but the military population. It's broken down into specialized units. We actually perform, of course, physical examinations, occupational health exams, flight physicals, and do a fair amount of preventive medicines. Basically, we're to maintain the mental and physical health of our air wing.
Colonel, can you tell us, give us a sampling of some of the worldwide missions that your group has performed?
Nowadays, we're all broken down into what we call unit type codes. We have specialty units that plug in and plug out, so it's rare for an entire medical group to deploy. So what we do, we send some of these specialized units like a preventive medicine package or a surgical package, and they join up with the active duty or other reserve units in theater, like in Iraq, Bosnia, Afghanistan, Somalia. So they'll actually plug into those areas. Sometimes we support the Navy, but most times we're supporting the Army as well.
And can you tell us about one or two of your recent missions?
I have deployed probably as much as anyone in the unit. Just last summer, I got back from Landstuhl, so it wasn't directly in theater, but it was part of a surgical package to help our guys who were coming back directly from theater, going to Germany before coming home. A lot of our guys are flight docs who support what we call aeromedical missions, where they fly our troops, our wounded troops, back and forth across the skies, either from Europe back to the United States or go down into theater and bring them back to Germany.
And Colonel, you fly those wounded troops in the C-130s from the 133rd?
You know, the 133rd has supported those missions, specifically in Afghanistan the last 2 years. We've done Iraq formally, but it is special when we're actually working as a team with our aircraft. But as I said, we usually plug into any unit that would be there. The C-130s really operate more intra-theater, and then when you have to leave theater and do the longer hauls, those are the C-17s that carry the guys there.
And Colonel, I understand that your unit provides medical service support for active duty, wartime tasking, state emergencies, and national or natural disasters.
Correct, because we have actually three missions. One is the federal mission where we're supporting the war on terrorism. Then we have the state side issues where the governor of the state of Minnesota is our commander-in-chief, and we respond to those issues. And then finally, we do local issues as city and different counties. So with the three missions, it's quite busy for us overall.
And have you also been involved in some humanitarian missions, sir?
This summer, actually early spring, we're going to be going to Honduras. We have about five or six troops are going to go to Honduras and provide medical aid for them. We have a mission going to support an Alaska issue with the native Eskimos there. And we've in the past gone to several places like Belize and Guatemala, but the Belize we go to isn't quite the Belize you see in the vacation brochures.
Colonel, have you been to were you involved in the Haiti mission or in Pakistan recently?
Our aircraft were deployed at the time, and we weren't part of that contingency. But I understand medical folks did go with our aircraft to the Pakistan mission, and we supported Haiti during that time, during the heyday of those. But also, we go back, we actually supported Katrina. So that was something we did have hands-on from a medical standpoint.
We're speaking with Colonel David Hamler, the commander of the 133rd Airlift Wing's Medical Group, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on News Talk 100.3 FM. Colonel, what would you say has been your best experience with the medical group?
I've been with the Minnesota Guard now probably about 16, 17 years. Before that, I was in Ohio. I transferred up and because of a fellowship, and I just stayed here. Great place to live, great place to work, and I love these guys. But being commander has been truly beneficial. I've got to watch our guys grow and develop. I've had a hand in helping develop some of the high school recruits that we bring in, and that's been quite rewarding. To deploy and take care of our guys when they're in harm's way, it's not tough for me. It's tough for the guys who are exposed to the problems, but it's great to be able to take care of them too.
Colonel, how many times have you been deployed with the medical group?
I've been deployed personally 5 times. It averages every probably 18 to 20 months. I've been fortunate that I've had great support from my employer. I'm a head neck surgeon here in town, and I work at the university out of Regents Hospital, Hennepin, and several. I'm actually at the VA right now. The way it works out for me is I have good support, but you can see where it would be tough on a guy in private practice or a small business trying to get away. And we have groups that recognize employers who are able to support our guys when they deploy.
Colonel, as the commander of the 133rd Medical Group, when a mission comes up, do you actually look for volunteers?
You know, surprisingly, it is an all-voluntary mission. On the active duty side, where, you know, that is their primary mission, they will go and then they'll look for support. And all we do is out of Washington, where our Guard Bureau is stationed, they'll put out the call that we need a certain package, and it's surprising how around the country people just stand up and will go at a moment's notice. We have a couple packages that are specialized, and they go all the time. It's that air medical evacuation group that I talked about. Those docs and those technicians will go and help fly our guys back and forth across the pond, so to speak, as well as in theater. And then we have dentists and myself, who's a surgeon, have gone several times.
So you actually build a team of volunteers from around the country to suit the mission?
Yes. In other words, the call will go out. And if you have a doc who has certain skills or a technician who say is a surgical tech, they'll marry up. And because the training is so coordinated, and we know what task levels we're supposed to be able to achieve, then they'll marry up in theater, and it's like you don't miss a beat. So it's amazing how the training coordinates everything that happens once you are called to duty.
Colonel, sounds like you're doing a fantastic job with the 133rd Medical Group.
We have a great group of people here. I tell you, you know, it's probably a reflection of the work ethic of Minnesotans overall, but it's across the country. It's great, but it's great to be here in Minnesota because everyone works and wants to do a good job, and it just reflects on them.
Colonel, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Colonel David Hamler, the commander of the 133rd Airlift Wing's Medical Group. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Want to know what's on the mind of Minnesota's Adjutant General? Generally Speaking is next on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
This is Senior Airman Kalen Weber from Bagram, Afghanistan, with the 455th EOSS. Just want to say happy holidays to my family back in Farmington, Minnesota. I'll be home soon.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
As I reflect back on 2010, I want to thank all military service members and veterans for their exceptional sacrifice and service to our state and nation. The deployments and redeployments of Minnesota soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen have become a common news story throughout the media. Families, employers, and schools have sacrificed with the absence of hometown service members. 2011 will mark America's and Minnesota's full decade of combat, the longest period of war our nation has faced. More than 22,000 Minnesota Guard members have served overseas since 9/11. Most have seen combat. Many have served three or four or more tours. Recruits now join the Minnesota National Guard because they want to be part of the struggle to ensure our freedom. They desire to serve their community, their state, their nation. When the decade began, the National Guard was essentially a strategic reserve. By that, I mean a group of replacements prepared to fill gaps in the ranks of the active components. But now, the National Guard has transformed into a fully operational force, essential to our nation's defense. This transformation has been essential to our national security, and Minnesotans have approached this new responsibility with admirable resolve. We have countless families to thank for supporting their sons and daughters, and mothers and fathers as they serve. In addition to a decade of war, Minnesota's sons and daughters have answered the call to assist the citizens of our state during emergencies like fires, floods, and blizzards. And 2010 was indeed a memorable year for the Minnesota National Guard. Citizen soldiers were deployed in January to assist the Martin County officials in blizzard relief. In February, more than 1,200 Red Bulls from the 34th Infantry Division returned home from a monumental mission in Iraq, where they led U.S. forces in 9 out of Iraq's 18 provinces in order to assist the Iraqis in establishing security, developing civil capacity, and setting the conditions for a successful drawdown of U.S. forces. The Duluth-based 148th Fighter Wing ensured their long-term viability by being upgraded to newer model F-16 Fighting Falcons. In April, nearly 600 citizen soldiers from the Montevideo-based 1st Battalion, 151st Field Artillery, returned home from a year-long mission of escorting convoys throughout Iraq and Kuwait. The St. Paul-based 133rd Airlift Wing deployed hundreds of airmen in support of Operation Enduring Freedom. The Minnesota National Guard was on site almost immediately after a devastating tornado hit Wadena in June. More than 2,700 soldiers from the 42 Army National Guard communities throughout the state were placed on alert for a future mission in support of Operation New Dawn. We said farewell to Brevet Lieutenant General Larry Shellito after 7 years of service to the Minnesota National Guard as our Adjutant General. And Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program continued to expand in order to connect service members and their families with services and support throughout the state. To the citizens of Minnesota, you should be proud of the men and women who serve in your state's National Guard. I'm humbled by the accomplishments of our citizen soldiers and airmen throughout 2010 and look forward to serving Minnesota in 2011.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. Each week, we feature Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. This week, Lynn Schluckebeer joins us. She is the Family Readiness Support Assistant with the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. Ms. Schluckebeer, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about what a family readiness group is and what you do in that capacity?
Sure. A family readiness group is a group formed and chartered and approved by each commander. And what they do is they really resource the families. They help them find help when they need it. They're also a sense of camaraderie. And pretty much family members are involved, but it's open to anyone. Employers can be in the family readiness group for a unit. Neighbors, anybody that has an interest in that service member.
So So when our troops are deployed and if their families need some help or some assistance of some kind, they first contact their family readiness group?
That would be a first line to contact, yes. We also have family assistance centers, which is a great resource for us, too.
And what type of calls do you get from the families of our deployed troops? Just an example.
Well, when they're deployed, you get all kinds of calls. You get, you know, you get calls that something in their house is broken down, or they may need help with some counseling for their children, or those types of calls. And sometimes you just get calls that they just need to talk. They need to talk to somebody. Perhaps they have small children at home, and they just need an outlet.
Lynn, I understand that your husband has been deployed a couple of times, once to Bosnia and once to Iraq?
Yep, that's correct.
And so you've been through this yourself.
Yes, I have.
And I would imagine that gives you some great understanding when you're fielding these calls from the other families.
Well, you do know where they're coming from. You know, no one understands your pain like somebody else who's going through it. So, and that's another reason why the FRG is, you know, it's so valuable. They find some friendships in there that they can call anytime. So,
which I think I know the answer to this, but which is harder, going through this yourself or supporting the others?
You know, I would have to say supporting others. You know, here's some really heartbreaking stories and some hardships, and it might not even be really that complex. It might be just as simple as they don't have family nearby, or they have small children at home, so they don't have anyone to talk to. But it's humbling to realize how okay I really am and how hard it can be, you know, for others. So I think it's hard to hear the stories sometimes.
Well, we're in holiday season this year, and I understand last year your husband was deployed over the holidays. How did you deal with the holiday last year at home without him?
Well, you always keep the traditions. You know, there's always some traditions that you keep. You go to grandma's on Christmas Day or those types of things. But in my family, we like to mix it up a little bit. You know, maybe we save the Christmas cookie baking until Christmas Eve, and then we stay up late making cookie and eating the dough and things like that. Or maybe we play some board games that we wouldn't normally play on Christmas and things like that. See, those types of things, when you make things a little bit different, it can make the absence seem a little less obvious.
We're speaking with Lynn Schleckebier, Family Readiness Support Assistant for the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Lynn, how do the parents deal with it when a child's deployed, or maybe a child when the parents deployed it? Do they have different types of ways to cope with the deployments?
It is different. I haven't been a parent, but what I've heard from parents with deployed children is a real deep sense of it's like losing an arm. It's like a real missing a part of you, and that can be a real deep, scary pain for them. And when a child has a parent deployed, it really shakes their foundation. You know, they feel that sense of loss. And fortunately, schools are getting much better at helping military kids and recognizing that they have military kids in their schools. So that's great.
Were you able to use today's technology to communicate with your husband when he was gone?
Oh, yes, we did. And we did a lot of that at Christmas, too. A lot more time on the phone around Christmas than years when he's home.
That has to make it a lot easier on the spouses and the children.
Yes, it does.
Tell me what our listeners can do if they know a family that's going through a deployment right now and dealing with the holidays without a spouse.
Well, if you know a family, you know, acknowledge their deployed service member and thank them. Thank the people that are here because they're making the sacrifice too. You can ask them if there's anything that they can do to help or that you can do to help them. The military family will probably say no, but if you know that family and you're comfortable with that, you know, just do it. Just go shovel their sidewalk, or if your kids are in sports together, just offer to be that driver, because time is always limited when when your soldier is gone, because there's only one of you doing the things that two of you used to do. You know, if they have small children, maybe leave a little bag of easy dinners on their doorstep, you know, macaroni and cheese, those kinds of things. If you know that family, you know, you can kind of do those things.
Something just as simple as watching the children for a couple hours to give the single spouse a break is pretty important, isn't it?
And that would be fabulous. That's probably the number one thing that spouses may need, but they don't know who to trust. So if you are familiar with a family and that family trusts you, that would be a very valuable thing to offer for them.
Lynn, any final recommendations for our listeners who might not have a military connection? What can they do to help support military families?
You know, just remember that people are out there serving. We have beyondtheyellowribbon.org that might be able to give you some ideas. There's some simple little things that you can just do every day. If your coffee shop has one of those little bins that says coffee for the troops, maybe you can, you know, buy a bag of coffee for them. Different communities are developing Yellow Ribbon City programs where you don't have to have a lot of skills. Maybe you're a plumber, but maybe you're not. Maybe all you can do is some cookie baking. But those FRG meetings, they would love to have your cookies. So it can be just little simple things that you can do to help military families.
Lynn, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Lynn Schleckebier, the Family Readiness Support Assistant for the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. We've linked to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. For more information on bringing service members all the way home, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, a story where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. Some may call this the most festive time of the calendar year. Across Minnesota, families are coming together to celebrate the passing of another year. But in many cases, military family members are missing. Some are deployed. Some have even given their lives for our country. It's this time of year that most of us think about a soldier standing guard, the Marine on patrol, the airman training for the next mission, or the sailor out at sea. When the reality is that those service members have been protecting our country all 365 days of the year, while their loved ones eagerly await their safe return. As we look forward to the new year, resolve to remember our military families every day. Volunteer to shovel snow for a family whose dad is deployed, or for the veteran who is declining in age. Say thank you to the soldier you see at the gas station, or give a hug to the mother of the Marine away at basic training. To learn how you can make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects service members and their families with organizations, agencies, companies, community support, training, services, and resources to bring service members all the way home. After the break, we visit the Commissioner's Corner and hear from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs next on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
This is Specialist Mark Bergeson from Kabul, Afghanistan. I want to wish my family in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, happy holidays. Let you know I'm doing all right out here and everything's still going well.
Christmas future is far away. Christmas past is past.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Deputy Commissioner Gil Acevedo.
In 2010, the Minnesota Veterans Homes had a number of accomplishments, including creation of a quality leadership team to represent all five homes, site visits, quality assessment at each home, work on an agency-wide two-year quality plan, implementation of two network-wide process improvement teams, and completion of a Medicare-Medicaid services feasibility study. In addition to taking this past year as an opportunity to step back and focus on quality, the Minnesota Veterans Homes are well on their way towards implementing person-centered care at all our homes. This is a gold standard of nursing care, as it encourages feedback and involves residents in planning and implementing their care plans. On the programs and services side of the department, 2010 was also an exciting and productive year. Our claims division represented more than 5,000 new clients and served more than 2,500 walk-in clients. The Minnesota Higher Education Program is a nation-leading program that provides education assistance to veterans at all public and private higher educational institutions in Minnesota. Annually, this program touches a staggering 250,000 Minnesotans. Yet another nation-leading program that MDVA piloted is the CORE program, which partners with Lutheran Social Services of Minnesota, bringing essential community-based services directly to veterans, military members, and their families at no cost to them. In the last year alone, this program served more than 1,400 veterans and family members. In addition, we are looking towards a renewed focus on women's veterans program and new outreach opportunities for underserved veterans and their families around the state. There are so many other strong divisions within our organization that had a record-setting year, including our Tribal Veteran Service Officers Program, Outreach, Veterans Preference Act, State Approving Agency, State Soldiers Assistance Program, and more. The Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs is proud to assist this nation's heroes, and we hope to continue to offer assistance for many years in the future. Thank you for your continued support. For more information on any of the programs I mentioned, please visit us on the web at minnesotaveteran.org.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Acevedo. You can find out more about Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs at minnesotaveteran.org or call 1-888-LINK-VET. Each week, we explore the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs' commitment to serving Minnesota veterans, their dependents, and survivors by securing benefits provided by federal and state laws. This week, Kathy Schwartz joins us. She is the Director of Veterans Benefits for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Ms. Schwartz, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you.
Can you tell me what specific benefits and programs does the state of Minnesota offer that are different or complementary to the federal government for veterans?
Yes, we have a state veteran cemetery, which is different from being buried at the national cemetery. We have the LinkVet line, which is the first in a nation line. We have a dental program, optical program. We have specific educational programs that are related to Minnesota veterans. And then we have special needs grants that are given on a case-by-case basis.
I'm curious about the criteria to meet a special needs grant and what it covers. What type of things is that for?
Okay, to qualify for a special needs grant, you have to make application through your county veterans service officer. And we take into consideration if a veteran runs into hard times or they're waiting several months to start on Social Security benefit or a pension benefit through the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, we can assist them with things like shelter, utilities. We have purchased water heaters. We've helped with wells. We've done some home repairs, hearing aids, done some auto repairs to get people so that they can stay working. And pretty much people should just go to their CVSO and, ask if it would be covered and they can put in an application.
So the special needs grants are to cover temporary expenses to help veterans get through some type of crisis?
Yes.
You mentioned the survivor and dependent education benefit is not highly utilized. What do you think? Why do you think that is? And what does who does this cover?
I think it is possibly an unknown program that doesn't get too much advertising. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Surviving Spouse and Dependent Education Benefit is available to children and spouses of Minnesota residents, veterans who were killed in action or died of a service-connected disability. And that covers free of charge tuition at a Minnesota State College or University. And it will pay the benefit until that individual has gotten a bachelor's degree. This past session, we opened that up to include people who, veterans that have lived in the state of Minnesota that were service connected and died, to only have to have lived in the state for 6 months before they passed away. In the past, they had to have Minnesota as home of record.
So most of the veterans are familiar with the GI Bill for educational benefits for themselves, but we haven't heard a lot about this dependent education benefit, which is sounds like it could be quite valuable.
It is really valuable. The person could get a four-year degree up to a bachelor's degree free of charge to them.
That's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
We're speaking with Kathy Schwartz, the Director of Veterans Benefits for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, here on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour at News Talk 100.3 FM. Kathy, you mentioned in the benefits subsistence. Can you tell me what that's about?
Yes, we have a subsistence program that a person that is going to be disabled for up to 180 days. For instance, if a person is a carpenter and would break their arm, or possibly a person that had a heart attack, they can go on our subsistence program, and we will take care of their immediate needs for up to the 180 days. Like, we will pay their complete shelter payment, either a mortgage or their rent. We will pay their utilities. They get a personal needs grant to help with purchasing food. We can pay for their health insurances while they're under the program. So that also can keep somebody from just completely going under kind of that safety net.
So all veterans are eligible for this?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, if I'm a veteran in Minnesota, which I am, how do I apply for these benefits if I needed them?
The application process is taken from the county veteran service officer. There's all 87 counties in the state have a county service officer. The individual or family member would go to the county and make application. The county service officer will do a recommendation and then submit that to the department.
Terrific. There's also a thing called the State Soldiers Assistance Program. Can you tell me how that fits into all of these benefits available for our veterans in Minnesota?
Yes, the State Soldiers Assistance Program is just the umbrella for all the different subsistence programs, dental, optical, special needs programs that we have in the agency. It's actually a fund, and that fund has actually increased over the last 5 years from like $1.4 million. It is now up to $5.9 million a year. So the need is greater, and we have been lucky to get that extra money to help the veterans.
Okay, so all of these benefits that we've talked about today are available from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And as we've said on the show before, if there's veterans in Minnesota out there and they have some type of problem, some type of a concern or an issue, they should go to one of their county veteran service officers and start there?
Yes, that would be the best.
And there's one of those, at least one of those in every county, usually at the courthouse?
Yes, that's correct.
And then they can help them sort through the issues and get them to the appropriate program that might be able to help them out.
Yep, they can help with state and federal benefits.
That's terrific. Ms. Schwartz, great information for our veterans today. Thanks for joining us on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you.
That was Kathy Schwartz, the Director of Veterans Benefits for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. To find out more about programs provided by the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, go to minnesotaveteran.org or call 1-888-LINK-VET. When we return, we take a look at Minnesota's military after the Civil War. That's next here on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
This is Captain Michael Butler with the Pactica Provincial Reconstruction Team. I just want to say Merry Christmas to my wonderful children, Patrick, Michael, and Katie, who are in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Merry Christmas. I love you very much.
the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so...
Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. This week, Leland Smith joins us. He's a Korean War veteran of the United States Marine Corps. He is an archivist at the Minnesota Military Museum and serves on the board of directors. Mr. Smith, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
I'm glad to be here.
Mr. Smith, we don't see too much written on the National Guard or the state militias after the Civil War. Can you tell me, was that a quiet period?
It's mostly because everybody had had enough of the military and the objective reality of warfare was all around them. It took about 6 years for the enthusiasm to be a militiaman or a National Guardsman came back. And so we had very little militia or National Guard activity until 1872 when some of the volunteer units started reforming.
Were there, and this was a result of the serious injuries and number of people wounded in the Civil War, what were some of the social issues that impacted the National Guard and the militias at that time?
Well, I think most of it was the re-expanding of the Pioneer Front. Railroads were being built, new settlers were coming into the area, and they were much more involved in getting themselves settled than they were in what had been the building of social organizations, which is what the militia was before the Civil War.
And how many people were involved in the Minnesota militia at that time?
Well, during the Civil War, 22,000 were actually in volunteer units, and then there during the Indian Uprising, which was going on at the same time, several thousand more formed informal volunteer units to defend against the Indian attacks. In 1872, they began to build it up one company at a time. By the middle 1880s, we had three regiments of infantry and a battalion of artillery in the actual organized National Guard.
We're speaking with Leland Smith from the Minnesota Military Museum on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Leland, we were talking earlier, you mentioned there was in 1898, there was a Leech Lake skirmish. Can you tell me what that was about?
Well, this is classified as the last of the Indian Wars. In reality, it was an exercise in arrogance, injustice, and bruised egos. The Indians had come together to discuss with the Indian agent the problems they were having with lumbermen coming in and stealing lumber from the reservation. While they were together, a U.S. Marshal and a sheriff came in and arrested two of the Indians on witness warrants, and one of them, Boganagashig, or Hole in the Day, insisted to his friends that they prevent this from happening. So they rescued him. They went across the lake to Sugar Point and hid in the woods. The sheriff was so upset that he'd been insulted by this Indian that he wrote to the or called to the governor, telegraphed him that the Indians were in uprise. They sent the 3rd Regiment of U.S. Infantry and 2 regiments of Minnesota National Guard up to the Leech Lake area to guard the railroads. The upshot of it was that 16 Indians stood off 80 U.S. Army troops. No Indians were killed. 6 whites were killed. 13 of the whites were wounded. And the only good thing that came out of it was one hospital medic that took care of the wounded under fire and was later awarded the Medal of Honor. But that was the Leech Lake Uprising.
Sounds like it was all a big mistake.
It was.
Mr. Smith, thanks for joining us today. We've linked to more information on Facebook and at the MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's take a look in the mailbag to see the listener question of the week. If you have a question, submit it to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining me in the studio is Deputy Director of Public Affairs for the Minnesota National Guard, Captain Kristen Ojay. Captain, what's in the mailbag today?
Well, today we're going to talk about what you can send to troops when they're deployed.
And Captain, you were recently deployed with the 34th Infantry, the Red Bull Division?
That's correct. I was located in Basra, Iraq. I got back in February of this year.
And that means you were there over a holiday season and you were there for a good long time.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, Mr. Lyons, some of the things that people, I received lots of boxes and so did lots of soldiers. Some of the things that were most noted were all the goodies that we received. And at one point, I received 200 pounds of candy from an orthodontist in Egan. And they threw in a few toothbrushes and dental floss. But I thought their message was, come back and see us when you're back home.
He was recruiting patients.
Absolutely.
Captain, what are the best items to send deployed service members?
Well, I would say that definitely written letters, photos from home of your kids, your spouse, family members. Those are really the best parts of getting things to get in the mail, but also getting newspaper clippings or even an entire newspaper from your hometown.
Interesting. Now, the last quarter, I imagine there's all kinds of gift boxes and things went to the troops, but now we're coming into the winter months, January, February, March. And there's going to be some things that they'd really like to see, as you said, some newspapers and some letters.
Absolutely.
Are there any items we should stay away from?
Well, especially in Southwest Asia, you want to stay away from alcohol and pornography. But also during the hot months, you want to stay away from chocolate. I can't tell you the number of times I got chocolate bars that were all melted inside, and that's not a good item to send.
Besides the 200 pounds of candy and a free visit to your orthodontist, what was the most interesting gift you received while deployed?
I would have to say that it was more like the best gift was a photo that my dad sent to me of when I was a little girl. I was about 1 year old and a backpack on his back.
That's interesting. So just to reiterate, over the wintertime, while we're all closeted in our houses and things anyway, if they do some newspaper clippings, send some newspapers, write some letters.
Definitely write some letters. I mean, in this age where everybody's so used to sending emails, getting a written letter from home and something that you can take back with you and share with your kids, especially as they get older, this makes a nice keepsake.
So the technology today is great, but it's still nice to get a letter.
Absolutely.
That's terrific. Captain, thank you for joining us today. And if you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com and let us know what's on your mind. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at the issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel David Hamler, Lynn Schluckebeyer, and Captain Kristen Oje from the National Guard, Kathy Schwartz from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Marine Leland Smith from the Minnesota Military Museum, Deputy Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Gil Acevedo, and finally, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next Sunday morning at 7 as we talk about new opportunities for veterans in employment and housing in 2011, Minnesota's role in the Spanish-American War, and we talk to Minnesota's senior enlisted leader about a year full of accomplishments and what's coming next for the state. Thank you for joining us for today for the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. If you have questions for our mailbag, or if you want to check out the podcast of today's show and all our shows, visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.